Where's your favorite place to take College Game Day? And I say every time, Eugene, Oregon.
Hello and welcome, Ducks fans, where and whenever you're watching or listening. This is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you up to date with current and former University of Oregon athletes and give you never before heard stories about your favorite teams and moments in Duck history. And, you know, it's been a while, I guess. We had a matchup last week with that team up north. I live here in the Seattle area, and we feel like we at Once a Duck, me and Sam here, we've given the Huskies enough attention from episode one, so we just skipped them this season. I know we've both been pretty busy. We were both at the game and the Colorado game before it, and man, just got to say, not even worth an episode. So Sam, go ahead and introduce yourself to the folks who don't know you already and are just joining us. Maybe after this week off, we get a whole new fan base.
You know what? You could hope that it might grow just a little bit. I love the fans we have, but there's nothing wrong with a little bit of growth. Nick, it was a ton of fun to see you the past couple of weeks, be able to see you down here in Eugene for that Colorado game, then go up to Seattle, be able to see Oregon, get a big W up there. Tell you what, that wasn't always the easiest of games, and it wasn't the driest game by any means, but it was a fun one, and I was glad to see Oregon get out of Seattle with a win.
Yeah, definitely. And we have gotten a huge surge of new followers, especially since those last two games, because it was like, man, all the fans wanted to get to know me, both of us there, both those games. And even though we didn't get to go down the tunnel as planned and expected due to the current COVID protocols of the team, still had a fantastic experience at the alumni tailgate. Got to make a lot of connections there, see a lot of people, and just an overall really, really good time. So for those of you that don't know, if you're not following us on Twitter at Once a Duck or at Samuel101TS or at Just Follow 61, get on it. You're behind. You're missing some of our best content there when the podcast isn't airing. And you can always go ahead and contribute. And our VIPs, we're always listening to them first. They're getting the episode early. And if you want to be a VIP, all you have to do, donate $5 or more to Once a Duck via Venmo, Cash App, however you want. Just let us know in the DMs and we will hook you up, get you on that premier list, and give you extra premier quality content here and there that I know our fans really, really appreciate.
I would hope they do. We spend time on it. My gosh.
Yeah. And every once in a while they get a really good laugh out of us too, that you guys won't normally get. But speaking of good laughs, let's talk about that the rain at that Husky game and just the Huskies in general. How about we fire up a lightning yellow round right here on the clock, and let's just do it about that UW game, and more so, you know, what you witnessed, what you enjoyed, and what you took a lot of pride in from our Ducks on Saturday. Let's go.
Simple enough, running game. Oregon, we knew it was going to be tough passing, especially in the weather. They just decided to punch the Huskies in the mouth, and it worked.
Yeah, it was fantastic, especially getting to see just, you know, Dye have another blowout game where, you know, it borderlines overuse, but just up to that line because he's still looking like a solid runner. Got to see him a little bit after the game. He looks healthy. He looks solid, knock on wood. But, man, love to see that dominant running game. And not just him, those younger backs are starting to really get their wheels under them.
Oh, they look great as well. You got to say, a guy like Trey Benson, who got out there a lot the last two games, was really being able to, not Trey Benson, excuse me, Cardwell, excuse me, who was really getting out there the last couple of games, being able to put his shoulder pads down and put some work in. He looked really great out there. Also looking great, the Oregon defense, that might have been the best performance we've seen this entire season. Head to toe, every single player, led by the freshman Bassa, they all looked so incredibly in tune in that game. They looked great.
Well, and you know, what else looked great to me was the offensive line, man. And I think one thing I've really, really loved is to see the shift of our really bigger guys in at guard, putting George Moore in at left guard right there. And, you know, a lot of the rotations they've had have been pretty effective in getting guys in there, you know, seeing Jeremy get really, really effective reps and Alex Forsythe getting back in the game. I was glad to tell him after the game, like, thank you, buddy. Good time to come back, because one of our best performing offensive linemen, Walk, goes down with an injury in that game and might not be able to play again to the bowl game, or, you know, but not again, another knock on wood situation. Don't want to speculate, but that was tough to see.
You know, it's always tough to see somebody go down. I'll turn a little positive here. We've been mentioning him all year. Camden Lewis, that might have been the most difficult field goal I've seen an Oregon kicker make in quite some time. 46 yards into the weather, into the wind. I was standing right behind the goalpost when it went through. It looked good all the way. There was never a doubt. A great kick from a young man who's grown so much over the last few seasons.
Hey, that's a great way to wrap it up with our lightning yellow round, because going into Wazoo, that's a guy that you immediately think of after the last time Washington State was in Autzen Stadium. You've got the team, you've got everybody at home, you've got everyone at Autzen Stadium all watching Camden Lewis, a guy that season we had lost a lot of confidence in as a fan base, and everybody could feel that energy, because you could even see it from down to Justin Herbert taking a knee, holding hands, saying a prayer, and you know what? Nailed it. And it's just built his confidence from there on. And, you know, that young man's putting a lot of hard work, and props to him. And I hope he scores a ton of points, even though I love touchdowns. You know, extra points are fine too, but I'd love to see him get up just a bunch of awesome field goals against Wazoo, just to remind people of that progress.
Well, you know, I always want success for every player, kickers included, but you know, Wazoo, this is a team that can score. I know we're going to get into our breakdowns a little bit more later, but Washington State, they are definitely capable of scoring the football. Oregon might need more than field goals this weekend.
They always are seemingly capable of scoring points against the Ducks, not always against other opponents. But you know what? This year has been really, really tough for them, and they've banded together. And I mean, right now, they're the premier football program in the state of Washington. I think that going into the Apple Cup this year, I mean, not saying I root for anyone in the Apple Cup, but I think this might be their year to finally kind of, you know, kind of get that monkey off their backs. But going into this week, man, they always seem to have our backs. And it's one of those Pac-12 night games. So Pac-12 after dark, the East Coast is just barely watching. And you got to know that right now the line is, what, 14 points, around two scores. And, man, that doesn't feel right when you look at the history between these two teams. And even though, you know, right now they're there with an interim coach, they've been doing pretty well. They've had some really, really good wins in the last game with Rollo. They beat Oregon State, and then, you know, they beat ASU without a coach. And you got to sit there and think that the bye week that they had to prepare for Oregon could work one of two ways. You can overprepare, you can see too much film, you can start seeing ghosts when you actually get out there on the field, or you could really rest yourselves, get an even better practice schedule aligned for the game, maybe an extra day in there to rest and recover after a couple hard practices. But man, I look at this matchup right now, and it's going to tell us a lot about the maturity of this Oregon team and where they're at, because it is a home game. Yeah, you're going to be playing a night game, which, you know, you're probably going to be playing against the refs as well as the team against you. Both teams will have to deal with it, but there's going to be some kind of craziness in the game. I just really think that if we get another double-digit win in this game, it's going to give me a lot more confidence the rest of the way to see the Ducks hang around in the top four and potential college football playoff ranking.
Well, and you know, Washington State, this is a team that's been playing a lot better football. In their last five ball games, they've won four of them. This is a 5-4 team on the year, and they were able to get the majority of those wins in the last five ball games. They beat the heck out of Cal, then they beat Oregon State in that close game they had at home. Their first game without Rollo as their coach, they were able to go beat Stanford in a tough game, lost barely to BYU, and then surprised Arizona State and absolutely punched them in the mouth a couple of weeks back too. You're right, they've got a week off. I don't know if that week is going to be as helpful as it may have been if they would have had the same kind of system in place the entire time. If you've got that same head coach, that bye week, you can start to kind of put stuff in and add new pieces. Whereas with this new, it's not a completely new coaching staff, but with an interim head coach, you know, they're more just trying to keep things rolling, keep things in line. You hope that Oregon is able to take advantage of the momentum they've built. They've built a lot of it over the last couple of weeks, really starting to roll into some comfortable wins. But, you know, it's a Pac-12 after dark game. Washington State's one of those teams that's just always going to play in a weird way on a weird night. People think, when you talk about the Pac-12, they're like, oh, what? Every game's one of those games for Oregon. Every game's a weird game. Every game's a hard game. Well, you're kind of right. They are. It's the Pac-12. The Pac-12 is a collection of very strange programs with a lot of very strange results.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, it's not just the Wazoo game, but we've had a lot of those over the years. We're about to talk to a guest here pretty soon that knows about those wild night games in the Pac-12 and how they go for the Oregon Ducks and how they can just be there right in your fingers that close to slipping out. And sometimes it has in the past against the Cougs. And you got to think, man, if Camden doesn't make that kick, the trajectory of this program right now may not be where it is. I mean, that was so huge looking back and thinking about this rivalry and finally turning the tide, because it was starting to feel like the Cougs owned us for a bit.
It was turning that way. I don't think there's a doubt about it. Oregon got a tough win on the road in 2014. And then after that, quite a few years of failure, four straight. Lost at home 2015 in a heartbreaking double overtime ball game, and with a Vernon Adams less Oregon football team. 2016, everything about that season went wrong, including that game up at Pullman. Mm-hmm. 2017, Oregon. I would like to say Oregon tried their hardest, but that was during the stretch where Herbert was injured. Didn't really go well. I remember being at that one, and that was just not a fun game to enjoy.
My first game back at the program, I remember it very vividly, unfortunately, you know, getting to be down there on the field. First time I got to see Justin Herbert in person, but unfortunately in street clothes. And yeah. It's not quite the same, but I was like, damn, might be taller than me. And that was about the highlight of that day. Unfortunately, man, that was one of those rough. Was it Burmeister starting?
Burmeister starting, yeah.
I remember talking to some of the alums on the sideline, and guys were just, you know, there were some mixed things, but there was a lot of confidence, you know, this guy could get it done. And then almost, you know, the first quarter, we're like, oh, it's going to be one of those games.
Yeah,
and
it's going to be one of those.
I had my doubts back then, but if I could look back and or go back and tell myself we'd be right here right now and the opportunity to get back in the college football playoff again. And at least, you know, even if it doesn't happen, this stage here right now of being where we're at and getting the eyeballs we're at, it's going to go a long ways in future recruiting and in terms of just understanding that this program, this brand is right there, top tier. They just got to win a couple football games that the nation understands, even if they have a weird slip up against Stanford with some controversy at the end. This team is up there with those teams that deserves to be credited with just a single loss. You know, you deserve some credit for the caliber of your football program and how close that loss was.
Yeah, and you're completely right. Oregon has put themselves in that position because of the wins they've been able to get against teams like Washington State. I remember personally going up to the game in 2018. That was the first time game day finally came to Pullman after all the years of protest, all the years of trying to get them there, and the Cougars showed up. That was the middle of Minshew madness. It was a wild time to be up at Pullman. But then 2019, that game that we've mentioned over and over, being able to come back, be able to get a tough win there. Washington State got in the end zone there late. They scored, and there was a lot of, oh boy, all right, let's see if Oregon can put something together. A lot of very shaky nerves, you could say, in the building at that time. But then boom, down the field. Herbert to Juwan Johnson picks up a big chunk of yards. Suddenly, Oregon puts themselves in position. They're playing for the field goal. Ball gets right through the uprights. It was a stressful evening. It was a W.
Yeah. And then last year, it's hard to take a lot away from it. You know, we did a full episode on it last year, but it just with everything in the COVID year in 2020, going up to Pullman is not the same if there aren't fans. That's one of the biggest advantages they have when you're up there. Yeah, the weather sucks usually. Yeah, it's always that long walk from, but back in the day, I don't know. I hope they've changed it. Probably not. You had to walk all the way from their, what do you call it? The student athletic center, which is you're in their lockers, just basic, the worst lockers probably in my career besides Boise State for the away team. It's just awful. And you have to walk maybe a quarter mile, which, you know, average person, average fan, not a problem, but in football cleats, just clanking along. man, made every joint in your knees and ankles that was already a little sore, a little more sore before you got there. Just always. And I only had to go up there once. And we're going to talk to our guest here pretty soon about that game in a lot of detail, because that was my quarterback that day, my man. I had an awful day, though. And I know I wasn't the only one, man. It just seems like things happen up there. And I still remember my one day in Pullman. The biggest hit I think I've ever seen in my career, Kenyon Barner on a kick return. And anybody that saw it, even on TV, there was a long pause, a long break, because, you know, they brought the ambulance out there. It was tough. I remember, you know, my family was all there, and I still remember them being pretty close to Kenyon's family, and them going down on the field then, and just it sucked the life out of us for a little bit. And for us to rally and still go and get a win down Kenyon, down a quarterback at times, you know, out there, just, I mean, a lot of backups played in that game. And just, you know, we got it done. It wasn't the prettiest win we had in that era, but you know what? It was a lot better than some of the coming years.
Oh, and you know, every great team has those road games that just end up being more difficult than they need to be. That was a perfect example of that game. Everybody looks to the Cal game from that year, but that game at Washington State presented a very special kind of adversity. And that's the type of gut check that every great team needs. And you know what? That's a type of gut check that I think this Oregon team has kind of taken this year, with the amount of injuries they've had, with the amount of shifting around they've had to do. And they've kind of taken it on the chin. They've got the one loss so far. It was under controversial circumstances, but the Ducks, they seem like they're ready to roll.
Yeah. Well, and we haven't been able to review that Colorado game yet either. So we'll talk about that a little bit and how that contrasts with at UW, a road game where at the beginning there, as much as we clown on them for leaving in the second half, that was a tough scenario. Almost packed house, pouring down rain, and we give up 9 points right away. And it could have been ugly, but this team seems to thrive on those situations, and they just get stronger and stronger and wear you down as the game goes. And that defense, man, when they're playing lights out, they're on top of it. I mean, Happel's out there with the club still getting the pick. I mean, some of that's on UW's offense and their inefficiencies, but a lot of it was the troubles the Ducks were giving them when we weren't just handing them the ball within, you know, the 5-yard line.
Well, and a really fun wrinkle, and you can see it there on the Happel interception, is the fact that more often than I think we've seen at almost any point this season, Oregon was dropping guys like Thibodeau into coverage, and it was really kind of confusing the Washington quarterback and Washington's offense. They weren't in any ways prepared for those ends to drop the way they were. Yeah. And it was wreaking havoc on the offense there for Washington.
And the way they're calling protections to Thibodeau, you know that they're going to usually be having at least a back to his side, or be sliding the entire offensive line to his side, or chipping him with a tight end or wide receiver. So if you're planning on doing that and then he immediately drops, you're wasting an extra guy. And if you don't have it built into your offense for that guy to flash, take a look, and then get out into the pass game, you're just wasting a guy back there. And multiple times it led to other guys, specifically Bassa, coming up right through the middle untouched.
Oh, and I mentioned him earlier, but he had such a lights out game. And it really was because he was the unaccounted man on so many plays. Yeah. So often he was the one guy they didn't have a body for, and he was able to take advantage.
Yeah, I've really loved the scheme of this defense. And it goes back to that Colorado game. Late gave up a couple touchdowns, but they were really, really flustered. I mean, Autzen had their offensive line, which, you know, with a new coach, probably not surprising, but offensive line was jumping off sides, very, very scared. And, you know, you compare both those last two games and you saw a little bit of just where this team is headed in terms of being able to control the football when they do, and run the football when they do. They can match up with anyone and just get efficient yards. And then this defense is going to cause you a lot of sleep lost as an offensive coordinator going into that week. And as you saw, anything could happen. You drop Kayvon, it could ruin your entire plan for trying to handle Kayvon Thibodeau. So his impact on the field, and, you know, it's not always shown in the stats, but you're right. When you do all those kinds of things schematically, especially coming off a Colorado game where you played it pretty vanilla, man, they just weren't ready for it. And I can't wait to see what wrinkles they have in store for Washington State this week.
And you have to imagine it's going to be something in the terms of containment. You're dealing with a guy in Delora who's one of the most active quarterbacks, especially moving in and out of the pocket. He's a very quick guy. He's got a big arm. He's one of the more underrated guys in the conference, as far as I'm concerned, just because of his ability to make things happen. He is a great example of a quarterback who can take nothing and make something out of it. A lot like the guy who we have coming on the line with us here in just a moment.
Perfect. Nate Costa, our quarterback friend and current analysis with the team. All right, with us now, Nate Costa, my favorite backup quarterback of all time, a guy we've talked about on this podcast multiple times, specifically for the most clutch PAT hold of all time. We've talked about it in the Arizona week, but it's Wazoo week. Nate Costa, thank you for joining us.
I guys appreciate you guys having me on. Been talking about being on this podcast for a while, so to actually have the day here, it's an exciting moment for me, that's for sure.
Yeah, we've been bugging you for a while. And again, we've talked about you since season one because we can't talk about an Arizona game without you. So we'll just start there. What is it like for you in your memory when you go back and you look at that play, how significant it was, not just for that game, but the entire season? What was it like sitting there? You get the snap from Jeff Palmer. It's not quite on point. How are you ready for that moment?
You can't really be ready for a moment like that. You know, you had practiced poor snap conditions kind of in practice leading up to that. And I've been so fortunate up until that point because Jeff was, I mean, he was just throwing dimes back there. He was on the money almost 100% of the time. And that just happened to be a little bit of a low snap in a critical situation. And you have to make a snap decision. Are you going to try and put the ball down and get the ball kicked through the uprights, or are you going to attempt to roll out and turn it into a 2-point play? And I really held on to it as long as I possibly could without, you know, having to roll out and try and create something on a 2-point play. And fortunately, if you guys watch the replay, I mean, that ball is almost on its side axis. The guy who really is the hero is Morgan Flynn. He did a really good job of getting his foot underneath that thing, putting him through the uprights. And if you guys could see the look of on Morgan's face, and I'm sure the look that I had on my face, we just stood up and looked at each other like, oh my gosh, we really just dodged a bullet right there. And obviously we did the things the rest of that game that allowed us to win that game. And as far as the snap goes, yeah, it was a little bit low, but Jeff was just on point the rest of the year. And before that, leading up to that. So I think he gets a little bit of blame that is a little bit undue, but I also think Morgan Flynn gets overlooked a little bit because he did an excellent job of getting his foot underneath that ball.
Nate, I love hearing about these individual stories and moments, but in order for any of them to have happened, you had to have made the decision. You wanted to go to Oregon. You wanted to make that part of your life. What was that decision like? What was that time in your life like when you were deciding that you wanted to be a Duck?
Very fortunate. I kind of ended up having a few options here and there. I ended up with 5 full ride scholarship offers. And as a quarterback, that's a great gift to have. They were all over the country, you know, considered Iowa, considered Northwestern, Utah, Colorado State, Boise State, Oregon. So I had a lot of options and they were somewhat spread around the country. When I did get the offer from Oregon, it's a place that I had visited unofficially, got to know Mike Bellotti, got to know at the time, the offensive coordinator, Gary Croton, loved the feel of the program. Probably the most memorable moment of my visit was actually meeting Kellen Clemens. Kellen was a senior returning for his senior year that year and just seemed like my kind of person, a down-to-earth guy from Eastern Oregon, just loves playing football, loved representing his home university, being from the state of Oregon, and just felt like someone I clicked with. So after I left that visit, I felt like Oregon had a pretty good shot of being where I would ultimately end up. And once I got the scholarship offer in hand, I really wasted not much time at all. And I did commit to Coach Bellotti. I believe it was over the phone over the summertime. And I was the first member of that 2006 recruiting class. And then we kind of built things from there. So having the opportunity to be an Oregon Duck is something I relish and will always hold and cherish as being a great, great opportunity. And what it's unfolded into, no one could have ever predicted that at the beginning. But I've just been so fortunate to be along for the ride, both as a player and now as a coach.
Yeah. And you've always been a team guy, as you've already made clear by giving so much, you know, props to your teammates. But man, what I remember, my first time I heard about you, I was a recruit. I was there and everybody was saying, man, if Nate Costa was just available, this team would still be going. Man, what happened that 2007 season for you? Everybody knows the Dennis Dixon story, but what's the Nate Costa story?
Yeah, obviously had some knee issues that season. I think it was later in the year, you know, maybe around game 8, 9 or so. Actually, right before Dennis ends up hurting his knee, We're executing a 2-minute drill at the end of, I think it was a Wednesday practice. He always executed 2-minute drill, pretty much full speed, full padded. You know, you're not tackling to the ground, but it's a full speed drill. We had a defensive end that came off the edge from the left, if I remember correctly, and got past the tackle. And he stumbled a little bit, came in a little bit low, and unfortunately ended up taking out my left knee, tore my ACL, my MCL, and a little bit of my meniscus as well. So it was a practice-based injury. And it's one of those ones, like, as soon as it happens, your knee bends in such an awkward position, you know that things are going to be a little wrecked up inside of there. So got hurt, had to have surgery, you know, a couple of weeks after that. And that season kind of unfolded the way that it did. And it was one of those freak seasons where you just had a number of key and critical players who got injured, you know, whether it be Dennis or whether it be Brady Leaf, who was the backup at the time, hurting his ankle, Cam Colvin, Jeremiah Johnson. There was just a rash of injuries that year. And I think that kind of changed the complexion of what that season was. And I know people talk about that being the year where Dennis probably wins the Heisman. And I have no doubt, you know, it's hard to project those things, but he was having that type of dominant season. And I continued to see that happening if he did stay healthy. And then who knows, you know, maybe we do make a run at attempting to win a national title. I think that team was that caliber of team. We had a lot of exceptional talent, but we're also a very cohesive unit and just a strong team that had strong leadership. And those types of teams are the ones that you usually see make those runs towards a national championship. It just wasn't in the cards for us that year. And, you know, whether it was my injury personally or just the plethora of injuries that we experienced that year, it just was not the year that it was going to happen for Oregon. I think if you look at what that team did later in the year, specifically the Sun Bowl win, I know people nowadays at Oregon aren't too impressed by attending the Sun Bowl or winning a Sun Bowl, but the fact that team, you know, was at the high of all highs and then kind of cratered toward the end of the year, but then during that bowl game was able to take pretty much a young roster and turn it into a nice dominant win over USF in the Sun Bowl. So I think there are some high and highs and there's some low lows, but they ultimately capped it off the right way. And it was fun to be a part of the journey at the beginning. And then when I was sidelined with the injury, I was also part of the team and a part of that journey as well.
Nate, throughout your tenure at Oregon, you saw the program take a pretty significant rise while you were there and on campus at Oregon. What was the general feeling season to season? Could you feel that rise occurring in the locker room, on the field, on a day-to-day basis? Or was it something where you felt you were doing the same thing every day and the results were just kind of changing?
You could feel it. You could feel a swell of energy. Part of that was leadership based, you know, whether that be player leadership or coach leadership. Being a part of it, you know, my freshman year, I'll always think about it. We made it to a bowl game, which at the time was a decent feat to accomplish. And we played BYU in the Las Vegas Bowl, which will forever live in infamy, in Oregon history, just because of how poor of a performance that was for us out there. And we were wearing those.
And the helmets.
The funny looking helmets, right? It was just compounding. It was really cold. And BYU just pretty much made it look like we didn't deserve to be on the field with them during that game. And I think that was a wake-up call for a lot of the players on that team. And I think it was a wake-up call for some of the coaches that remained on that staff going forward. And then you built onto it in 07. You know, obviously the introduction of Chip Kelly as the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach and bringing a different style of offense that really fit well with the players that we had on the roster. I think people always forget that it also fit well with our strength conditioning program from Jim Radcliffe, which was a very speed-based strength and conditioning program that obviously helped. And then it built, you know, your 07, you got your Sun Bowl, 08 Holiday Bowl, 09, we make it to the first Rose Bowl since like 1994 or something like that. And then obviously we cap it off my senior year by competing for a national championship against Auburn. Obviously we don't get that done in the Fiesta Bowl national championship, but it was just like each year was a step higher and higher. And I think we achieved heights that people probably did not expect that team, that roster, and that program at the time to achieve. And it really set the path forward and the trajectory for the program is ultimately doing nowadays. And that's a great feeling to have. And obviously things are going to continue to get higher and they're going to climb higher. We stand on the shoulders of those that come before us, both as players and as coaches. So it's fun to be a part of the ride, having done so as a player and now seeing these new players, these fresh faces that I, you know, even have a hand in recruiting, seeing them experience some of the same things, you know, taking that step each day that allows them to build towards whatever that ultimate goal is.
Yeah. What was the quarterback quarterback room like when you transitioned from Coach Croden to Coach Kelly? And what was it? What was the difference in your learning curve there?
Yeah, from a person standpoint, from the people that were in the room, you know, I had Dennis Dixon, you had Brady Leaf, myself, Cody Kemp, Justin Roper. There were a few guys in there. Dennis was kind of more of a quiet guy, kind of stuck to himself. Brady Leaf was the ultimate mentor for me. And as soon as I stepped on campus, he took me under his wing and just taught me the ways of being a college quarterback, how to watch film, how to take care of your body, how to navigate media at that time. Like, he really gave me ins and outs of it. And having the experience with his brother, Ryan Leaf, I think helped him. And then he kind of passed some of those learning points on to me. So I'll be forever grateful to Brady for that, because he really set my trajectory and just allowed me to mature at a much faster pace than I might've without him. The difference between Croden and Coach Kelly was just attention to detail. You know, Coach Croden is an excellent offensive mind, has a lot of great ideas he can put up on a grease board like most college football coaches can. But Chip was just fanatical about detail and coaching the quarterback position, not only in scheme, how to read, how to progress plays, but also footwork, you know, throwing motions, all the stuff that really goes into playing one of the more technical positions that exists in sports. He was just all about it, high energy about it. And you could see he just like lived and breathed it. And that was his stuff. And that was his deal. And obviously, as he progressed in his career, he took that attention to detail and he put into more of a head coaching role where you're more of a CEO. But he always has had a hands-on feel with the quarterbacks, which is critical. If you want to be a successful head coach in college football, in the NFL, you don't have to coach the quarterback, but you need to understand how quarterbacks tick. And that's one thing that he has always had a good feel for, is how does a quarterback tick? And really, quarterbacks are based on confidence. If you can breathe confidence into your quarterback, I don't care if you're a defensive coach, if you're an offensive line coach, if you can breathe confidence into your quarterback, you got a pretty good chance to win. And that's one thing that Chip did to a high level.
Nate, you had, as you went through, you had so many different seasons, a different style with your different coaches. It all kind of came together in that 2010 season. I know there's a particular game Nick really wants to get into, and I'm going to let him get into that right after this. But I wanted to ask you, in preparation for that year, as you were becoming a senior, coming into that final season, what was the preparation like on a team level, and what were you doing day in and day out to prepare for that season?
Very unique season. I mean, obviously in 2009, Jeremiah Masoli was the starting quarterback and finished off that year. He was an excellent quarterback at Oregon. I think sometimes he doesn't get enough credit for all that he did accomplish as the starter. 2009 was a good year for him. And then obviously he got into some trouble off the field and was not able to be eligible for the 2010 season for us. So it essentially thrust myself and Darren Thomas into a quarterback competition. You know, and obviously Darren's an exceptionally talented quarterback and brings a lot of skills to the table. But my mindset at that point was, A, getting the team ready to make a run, right, for this to be the best Oregon team in history. And then B, for that to be my team, for me to be the starting quarterback. So it was kind of, there was a team focus, but there was also an individual focus. And obviously we accomplished our goal of being one of the best Oregon teams in history. I did not accomplish my personal goal of being the starting quarterback, but I also found other ways to contribute to the cause. Got to play in a number of games and got to contribute on special teams, obviously. But I think as far as preparation for that season from a team standpoint, we had one of the best summers that we've ever had and that I've ever been a part of, just as part of a team unit. And that not only goes into the physical preparation, the weight room, the conditioning outside, you know, in the heat, the 7-on-7, the team drills that we run kind of independently without the coaches. But also from just a team building and a team bonding standpoint, we spent a ton of time together just hanging out, you know, just being college students, essentially living the dream. Because for anybody that knows what it's like to be an Oregon Duck football player, Nick can attest to this. I mean, it's like living in a dream. It's really cool. You're the envy of many people out there, and you get to live those 4 or 5 years someone else's dream. And we had a really good time that summer, just getting to know each other, becoming closer, more bonded as a team. And I think that's important. I think that in the game of football, because it is such a physically demanding game, the teams that perform the best are the teams that truly care and love about each other, or care about each other and love each other. And we had that year, and that was built over the summer.
Yeah. And built over a couple of really fantastic century clubs that will go down in history. So
yeah, I knew the century club was going to make it in there, but you know, that was in the winter bowl preparation. So I didn't want to kind of touch on that. And I'm sure that's going to spur a number of questions on.
I was just throwing it out there as a jab, but hey, I know we got a lot more to talk about, a lot more important stuff than that, but you did have one start before we talk about you stepping up in the Wazoo game, man. It was my first start too, and what a day it was down at UCLA 2009. We got it done, but sure was not pretty, and I did not help you out too much, brother. I'm sorry for that, but what's it like to be the second guy and just kind of knowing you have to be ready, and why were you so ready, and what was the difference between that and how much more ready you seemed the next year at Wazoo?
Yeah, I think that the role of backup quarterback, I think you're in some ways you're one of the most popular people on campus, because if the offense isn't performing up to standard or the quarterback isn't performing up to standard, everyone thinks that you're the answer. So you have to deal with that essentially, which in my days wasn't that big of a deal because we had high level quarterback play and we were doing really good on offense. So that wasn't necessarily the push that was going on. But the hard part is preparing yourself like you're going to be the starter, because you can get a bit lackadaisical if you let off the gas and say, oh, I'm probably not going to get in this game. I'm not going to finish watching my third down cut up. If you let yourself fall into that mental trap, you really can get yourself in instant trouble. And fortunately for me, I never fell into that mental trap. And I think Chip Health, they did a really good job of, you know, treating me like I was a starter, even though I only started one game. And even though I was, you know, the backup quarterback, they really treated me like the starter. They made me feel that way. Once again, making me feel confident in myself, and that translated onto the field. And, you know, being the backup quarterback is not an easy task, because you get thrust into a game and you usually don't have a chance to warm up very much. And you've got to just go out there and operate. I was fortunate to have a great supporting cast around me whenever I was in the game. And that's really what made the difference for me. I mean, great five blocking offensive linemen up front that made things easy. I had receivers like Jeff Mayo, Drew Davis, running backs like the Michael James and Kenyon Barner. I mean, if you have that type of supporting cast, you're going to be okay in the end. And that's probably where things get a little bit overvalued when it comes to me. It really wasn't about me. It was more about the team. We just have really good teams. You know, we have really good offensive units. If you talk about the 2009 UCLA game, you know, not our best offensive performance, and that goes down to me as well. But we got help. I think Thomas Jackson returned an interception for a touchdown, got us on the board. I think maybe Kenyon returned a punt or a kickoff for a touchdown. So, like, we got a special teams touchdown. We got a defensive touchdown. And then I threw a little dinky screen to Jeff Mayo that he took, like, 25 or 30 yards to the house. So, once again, it was like the full team effort. And it was just great to get a win in the first start of your college career. It was in California, which is where I'm from. It was in the freaking Rose Bowl of all places. And hey, it was against UCLA. So there was a lot of boxes that we checked that day. And I really, really enjoyed the heck out of that win. And I'm sure you did too, Nick.
Well, the only box that we definitely didn't cross out was an effective 67 counter pass. I think I remember the install that week kind of going, okay, I can see this working. And then they call it when we're at our own, you know, one-yard line. Yeah. Not on you, buddy.
That's one of those ones.
I'm glad you flushed that.
The play call comes in and you're like, you know what? This thing's going to go 99 yards. And then all of a sudden – you throw a pick six maybe one of the only pick sixes I've ever seen that went for a gain of zero, right? So it was a 0 yard touchdown return because he picked me off in the end zone. I have to give it up to him. I think that was Akeem Ayers, if I remember correctly. Still kind of haunts me in my dreams. But one of the most athletic plays I've ever seen on a football field. And all I could do is kind of stand witness how he was intercepting the pass I had just thrown and then toe tapping for the touchdown. So if it weren't for that, the defense would have had a shutout.
I just remember the sound of it because me and Asper pull around. We're looking the other way, and then all of a sudden, it just doesn't sound right. You look around and go, oh, what happened? Oh, yeah. No.
Funny story. Chip actually apologized to me right after that play.
Wow.
He's like, I shouldn't have called that play. And I'm like, I shouldn't have thrown that ball. It was all good.
We got the W. That's what counts.
And Nate, so that UCLA game was your first start. The next year at Wazoo, the team that Oregon plays this week, that was a game where you were called upon at a time when maybe you weren't expecting to be. You had to come in. You had to deal with a game that was having a lot of adversity going on. that be not only had Darren gone down, but Kenyon had gone down earlier in the game as well. Talk about the kind of energy when you stepped onto the field there in Pullman, and then what it really took to be able to rally the guys and get ahead to a W.
Yeah, and I know we've got Wazoo at home this week, but for anybody that's ever played Pac-12 football or played a game in Pullman, I mean, I don't care what time of year you're there. It's just a spooky, different place. Like weird things happen on the Palouse. So obviously we were playing that game there at Wazoo, and it was just a funky game. You know, Darren did get hurt before that. Kenyon got pretty, what we thought was pretty seriously hurt on a kickoff return, I believe. And that was a scary moment for all of us because, I mean, Kenyon's such a great guy, such a big part of our team. We were all worried about him, and that emotion, you can't help but feel that emotion in the game. So we were all dealing with that a little bit, and we just didn't have a great start to that game. It was a bit lackadaisical, specifically on the offensive side of the football, and we didn't have a lot going up to that point. Darren goes down, and I'll never forget it. Chip looks right at me, stares into my soul and said, "You're going in." And I'm like, "All right, well, let's do this." Didn't even really have a chance to warm up or nothing like that, but got the opportunity to go in there. And honestly, it was once again, supporting cast. Like, look at the guys that I had playing football around me, you know, Jeff Mayo, Drew Davis, David Paulson, like, it's just a bunch of studs that I was able to play the game of football with, and they made my job much easier on that day. And I was able to complete a few passes, get the ball spread around, carry a couple times myself. And it was also a really good game plan. And I think that we had a solid game plan dialed in for those guys. And that was really the story throughout that season. We were playing football at such a high tempo, to a tempo that a lot of teams really couldn't hang with. And we were in really good condition because of the way we spent our summers and the way we practiced. And that kind of unfolded out there. And it definitely wasn't like an individual performance that stands out in my head. It was more of just like a collective team effort. And we had a slow start to the game, but we said, "Hey, put our foot down. Okay, let's change the momentum of this game." And we really willed that thing into being a game that we won. And I think we won it in a fairly commanding fashion, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, we did. And, you know, one thing I've really loved about you, and everybody evaluates quarterbacks for their decision-making, for their arm talent, for their athleticism. But the thing that I really always appreciated about you, especially, you know, a lot of practice film nobody will ever see, but things that did translate on game days, you were always a wizard with the football. And you had a lot of weapons around you, but the way you delivered the football to them, the way you carried out your fakes, even though you weren't necessarily the biggest threat to run the football, guys had to feel threatened every time you carry, just because the way you rode the carry right into the running backs to the very end. And when you pulled the ball, no one had any clue who had the football. Is that something that you're still able to translate to other quarterbacks in your current role today with the team?
Absolutely. And obviously the quarterbacks we have in our room are, I mean, so much more talented from a physical standpoint compared to myself. But I think when it comes to playing the quarterback position, I tried to play the quarterback position like a point guard would play on a basketball court, and that wasn't necessarily my job to score 35 points a game, but I was going to get 12 assists, you know, and I was going to fight and get 8 rebounds for you. So I was going to distribute the ball to my playmakers, and I was fortunate to have a number of playmakers around me. And really, as far as, you know, being a magician with the football goes, that's just good coaching. You know, that's Chip, that's Health, teaching me on the finer points of playing the position of quarterback and really drilling that home when it came to that in practice, because that was going to translate into the game. And a number of those coaching points, and honestly, a lot of the anecdotal quotes that I'll say to this day are things that Chip taught me, or things that Helfrich taught me. And I think everybody has that relationship with, like, some of the best coaches in their life. They're going to take on the form of some of those coaches, and they're going to pass those coaching points on, because the game of football does change. It does evolve. But a lot of the basics are always going to be there and always going to remain. And I try to pass on some of those coaching points to our quarterbacks. And hey, if they can do some of the stuff that I was able to do, but do it with their talent level, like, watch out. These guys have a really bright future. And I'm sure we'll talk about these guys a little bit later, but the future of Oregon football is bright. Let's just say that.
Nate, one thing that I love that you were involved with often during your time in Oregon, it was a lot of fun and creative two-point opportunities that you were able to be out there for. Do you have a specific design or specific play that you remember being your favorite that you would, if you could, take and transfer and use in this current Oregon offense a little bit?
Yeah, so we call that the swinging gate offense, and that was Steve Greatwood's brainchild. He really enjoyed that, and he kind of ran with it. And it's not often you'll see a team that will devote this amount of practice time, meeting time, to just their PAT and field goal team. But because we were so creative and so successful with it, I think going back, I want to say it was 100%. We did not attempt a two-point conversion that we did not actually convert, which was something that was important to us, right? And that really changes the math of a game from time to time. If you're adding an additional 2 points as opposed to one, that's going to put your opponent in a unique situation where they're going to have to make a decision down the line. So I think it was great to have the opportunity to do it. But the reason, once again, why we got to do it is because we had people that I could get the ball to who are going to get the job done. You're going to gain the 3 yards that it takes to convert a 2-point conversion. And I think about guys like Morgan Flint. I threw into Morgan Flint. He got that thing across the goal line. Ed Dixon, guy like that. And I think we had a really unique one. And I think we called it against Washington, if I remember correctly. And it had a very unique name. It was actually called Pooper, which is really funny, right? I'm sure it'd be good for the podcast. But it was a handoff to the kicker right down the middle, right? Right up the pooper. So we had a certain look that we had to get to activate it. And once we got it activated, I had to actually yell out, "Pooper, Pooper," right? So I'm doing this, and the Washington defense is like looking at you like, "What is he saying?" Right? They probably thought that I was spazzing out or something like that. And snapped the football, handed it to Rob Beard, and he just walks into the end zone. So that was one of my favorite, just because anytime a kicker can score, I just love that. Because those guys, I mean, they're kind of looked on as not really being football players. But if you know a guy like Rob Beard, he is the epitome of a football player. I mean, I think he had as many tackles as some of our linebackers, to be honest with you. He was so involved. But I love seeing those. I love seeing Morgan Flint score. I love seeing Rob Beard score. So that was definitely one of my fondest memories. And I'm not sure Coach Cristobal is going to be on board with us handing the ball off to Camden Lewis, our kicker, because he might not be that kind of guy. But I might try to sell it to him and see what he says.
Hey, I love it, man. And Pooper all day. Former podcast guest Rob Beard would love that. And not only can't leave him out. If Jeff Palmer is going to moss someone at Stanford or something like that, that's another one of those be special moments we love to highlight on this podcast, because there's nothing like special team scores. Nothing exactly, like it. Man.
And those guys are the unsung heroes. And whether it be the long snapper or the kicker, like, everyone just expects them to do their job. And when they don't do their job, people want to make noise about it. But the fact that they get an opportunity to actually put their hands on the football after the snap, right, and score a 2-point conversion, and especially in a game like Palmer did against Stanford. I think it was David Paulson who threw that ball to him in the back of the end zone. But like, I love those kinds of moments, because those are those things that are always going to be around around the program, and just highlight plays and great people making great plays. And I'm sure Jeff Palmer is going to be telling his kids about that one for years.
Definitely, definitely. And you talk about those expectations at that position, but I think, you know, and I'd love to know, as a quarterback that's come back in the program now, what's it like for you when you hear the heavy criticisms of our quarterback now that just, you know, it's unfathomable to me, you know, even coming Marcus Mariota having a bad game in his freshman year. I just can't imagine the swell of boos that we've heard this year at the Cal game. I have to know what it's like for you to know that expectation is that much higher. And how do you deal with that as a quarterback?
Yeah, you play the position. And really the funny part about the position of quarterback is that you choose it, right? Playing quarterback does not choose you. And we all understand the weight and the burden that comes with playing the position. I think it's unique. It's like people don't play quarterback. They are quarterbacks. That's just part of who you are and who you become. And it carries with you even when you're not playing the game anymore. You just are a quarterback. It's just a quality that you have. And I think some of the expectations that are just generally around this program are what kind of leads into that kind of stuff. Those expectations are just naturally going to carry over to the quarterback, because in a way it's the most important position on the field, at least on the offensive side of the football. So people have high expectations for that. In a way, that's a gift. You know, you're at a school where the expectation is that you're going to win more than 10 games a season, and you're going to bring home trophies at the end of the year, and you're going to do so with high level quarterback play. That's a gift in a way, but it's also a curse. You know, I think that when it comes to hearing some of the boo birds that have been in Autzen, you know, some of those games, like think about the Cal game, I'm a little less concerned about it. I think that's a very, very, very small minority of Duck fans that are making their opinions known. And hey, who knows, maybe they had a frustrating week at work and they come to Autzen Stadium just to vent a little bit of that frustration, and we kind of have to hear about it. And I address it with the quarterbacks. I let those guys know, like, that's not the majority of Duck fans. I talk to the majority of Duck fans. I talk to the ones that have been fans for 25, 30, 45 years. And I know how they feel about this team. I know how they feel about this quarterback room. And the simple boo that you hear on that Saturday when we don't convert on third and long is not the general feeling that is around this program. It's not something that you should be concerned about because it's outside noise and it's uncontrollable. We only focus on the controllables in our quarterback room and in within Oregon football. If it's something that we can control, we're going to practice it. We're going to work it. We're going to control the heck out of it. But if it's some outside noise and someone else's opinion that ultimately does not matter, we don't care because we just don't have any control over what comes out of someone else's mouth. And that's the approach that we've taken. And that's the approach we'll continue to take. And there's going to be highs and lows in Autzen Stadium. There's going to be highs and lows outside of Autzen Stadium because that's the game of football. It's who deals with that our adversity the best. And we've done a heck of a job dealing with that adversity this year. And I'm really proud of that quarterback room and what they've done, specifically Anthony Brown. You know, I think that people don't give that man enough credit. I'm around him every single day. And I know what kind of person he is. And I know what kind of quarterback he is. And I know how this team rallies around him. And that's the definition of a good quarterback. If you've got a team that will rally around their quarterback, you know you've got something there. And that's what we got right now.
Nate, one of the last things I'll ask you, because I know we don't want to take up your whole night, but it's something that I definitely am curious about. On this podcast, we talk to a lot of former Ducks, but a lot of these guys are more than a few years removed from the program. We've had a couple of recents, but not too many. As somebody who's in this program on a day-to-day basis, working around the current staff and players, how would you really describe how Oregon football is run at this moment?
How is it run? That's a very, very vague and broad question. There's a lot of different ways that I can go with that. I'd say we are very process-oriented. So we have our processes, daily processes, weekly processes that are outlined for us by our head football coach, Mario Cristobal. Everyone knows what the expectation is, what their job specifically is, and you're allowed some autonomy to go and perform your job. Our process is replicated week in and week out. So you're doing the same stuff on Tuesday and Wednesday in week one that you're doing on Tuesday and Wednesday in week 13 or whatever it may be. And the continuity of that, just the expectation and knowing what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to deliver it. Now, it's high stress at times. You know, it can be a bit overwhelming for certain personality types, but that's the reason why we are such a high-performing organization, because the standard has been set to such a high level. And we're always trying to chase that standard and elevate that standard. So if I could describe how it's run, I'd say just process-oriented. If you talk about deviating from the process, not going to happen. We're going to stay on course. We're probably going to eat the same meals for pregame. We're probably going to travel at the same time for away games because we have a process. We feel strongly about that process and that it works. So there's no reason for us to change, deviate, or do anything different because, you know, why try to fix something that's not broken?
Well, I've only got one more question for you, but I've got to already give you a perfect grade A+ on the coach speak, my friend. You've got it down. You've got it down to a point. And for that, I won't end on a Century Club question. I'll ask you instead, buddy, what's it like for you and what's it mean for you to come back to University of Oregon as a former quarterback and share your experience, not just with the quarterbacks in that room, but everybody you probably encounter there in Eugene?
It's meaningful. It gives me drive and it gives me a passion to wake up at 5 a.m. and go in for a 14-hour day, 7 days a week. It's not an easy job. What I do requires passion and it requires a love for what I do. If you don't have the love and the passion for the players and for the program, you're not going to be successful because you're going to skimp on the details. So I'm fortunate to be in a position where I have the love and I have the passion for what I do. And that makes the job easier. It's not easy. It's a very demanding, very challenging, tough job, and it's not for everyone. But I'm in a fortunate situation that I'm at a university working for a program that I absolutely love, and I want to push this mission forward. I want the U of O to be successful, both on the campus side of things and also on the football side of things. So it makes it a little bit easier for me. And most people would know that before I took this job as a senior analyst for Oregon, I was working for Chip Kelly at UCLA. Chip's a great man to work for, a great coach. I learned a lot from him. And he was very hard to leave. I'll tell you that. He did not make it easy on me to leave. But there was one job that I would leave for, and I was offered that job. And that's why I ended up taking it. And I came back like May of 2019, just in time to coach Justin Herbert. And obviously we ended up winning a Rose Bowl. So somewhat of a fairy tale ending, and the fairy tale continues for me. I'm in such a unique position. And obviously, as I continue in this profession, I'm going to have to elevate. Leaving the University of Oregon will probably be a part of my future. And I've accepted that, but I'm very fortunate to be here now. And I'm going to make the most of every second that I'm here.
Well, that's why we knew you'd be the perfect guest to have on, because once a duck, always a duck, brother. Thank you for coming on, and take care, and can't wait to see what the Ducks come out with for Wazoo this week.
Awesome, guys. Appreciate you very much. Thank you very much for your time, and go Ducks.
Go Ducks. So I got to tell you, we've had a lot of great guests this season, and congrats to you and Joey for really carrying that last episode during Colorado. Joey Harrington, a fantastic guest, and even better co-host and fill in for me. But man, Nate Costa really just brought it. That was one of our best, most detailed interviews. And even though we joked with him, we really do appreciate that coach speak, because it's something unique that we really haven't had yet, that perspective inside the program right here and now. And I think we got a lot out of it.
Exactly. And I mean, he hit the nail on the head. Exactly. I did ask a very vague question. I was curious what his answer to such a question would be. It's like when a teacher gives you a paper and doesn't tell you the word count whatsoever, they're just like, all right, go for it. I just wanted to see how he would how he was going to respond to that. And I really liked it. I really liked what he had to say about how detail oriented this team is and how they are just on the same schedule all the time, taking care of business. I love that mentality in the way that this program is addressing things day by day.
Well, that's a Chip Kelly disciple for sure, to let you know you asked a shit question. So you can tell he learned from the best, and he's still got it. Cause yeah, he was very, very great to address it. I could basically go anywhere I want with this question, and that's on you.
I want him to go.
I love it. And again, that's one of those separations between, you know, the mentality of a former player and a former player that's getting into coaching. And as he said, a quarterback, you can't take it out of him. And you see with Anthony Brown, man, this guy is a leader. The team can rally around him even when he's not playing his best and still believes in him. And yeah, regardless of the boo birds out there, I think he's right. And it was very, very good timing to get this in as we go into a Wazoo game that could be potentially a lot more frustrating than the certainly the betting odds say is a 2-touchdown favorite. I don't think it's going to be like that, but if it is, it's going to be a testament to how Anthony Brown leads this team and how our defense comes out and plays.
Well, you know, the defense is really going to be the key. I think Oregon's offense is going to be able to do a few things in this game. I think that Washington State has given up points throughout the season for the most part. In most games, they've been giving up at least a few touchdowns. Oregon's going to be able to get stuff done. It'll be whether or not the defense can really stand there and make the stops necessary. Arizona State's defense seriously struggled trying to contain it, but other teams have been more successful. This Oregon team is the most talented defense, player by player, position by position, in the conference. It'll be time to really see if they can step up to the plate coming up this week. That number 3 ranking on their head on national television, a late ball game, a lot of eyes on the Ducks.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's an exciting time to be a Duck, and I can't wait to be there personally. We saw the uniforms today drop. I think they're trying to steal from my captain's outfit with the white, green, white there combo. But you know what? They told us to wear black, so I think I'm wearing black, right? Some people have told me this counts as black already, but might be wearing this in Austin. I'm definitely not going to be busting out the captain's hat as many people have requested, but you'll be able to see me with the big O chain. Might have to bring a ring or two, probably not double fisting it, but you guys definitely get in touch with us if you're at the game, because you know, we're there, and we're going to be having a great time. But aside from just football, man, basketball started back up this week, and boy, did they have some games to start it off. Not just the men's side, but a great women's blowout, man. What a time to be a Duck, because we've got some bigs on both of those teams that are impressive.
Well, you know, as we get more into basketball season, we'll talk about it more, but just for now, this Oregon men's basketball team, I'll start with them. They played the earlier game on Tuesday. It was the game that I was able to see at least most of, and I'll tell you this, just like a lot of past Oregon teams, to start the season, the perimeter is really going to be the key for Oregon. They've got some really talented guys out there, whether it's a guy we know like Richardson or Young stepping up, coming over to the program. Harding's been really, really good. He showed what he can do for this Oregon team. They're going to be big time. The guys inside, they'll learn, they'll develop, they'll grow. You had a guy like Big Frank in there who was taking care of some business, getting some things done, but clearly some space to grow. Same with Nathan Biddle, some space to grow for sure. But once they start to develop a little bit and you get the big boy Nafali Dante back in there, that men's team is going to be very dangerous. For the women's side, well, we're just seeing what happens when top recruiting class after top recruiting class after top recruiting class gets stacked. They're just incredible. They are just an incredible team head to toe. They are so darn good, whether it is their perimeter play, whether it is how good their guards have been, or it is the big ladies inside. They are so darn impressive. They were able to get such a big win, and I have a hard time seeing them not getting a big win like that, at least until Pac-12 play.
Yeah, off the top of my head, without looking it up, I think Prince and Sabali combined for 32 points, I think. And, you know, that is fantastic. That's the kind of production you want inside. But it wasn't just inside. I think I saw Sabali hit a three. You know, being distributors when you're a threat as a big guy down there, a big woman, you know, it's always that much better if you're not only a scoring threat, but they can just throw the ball down in there and let you find open passing lanes, because that opens up your three-pointers, your mid-range game, and the dribble drive even there after that. It, fantastic assist coming off the dribble drive. A lot of fun to watch. You know, I was flipping back from the Las Vegas Knights Kraken game and watching the women at the same time. And I have to tell you, once the Kraken were down a little bit, I started finding myself even in those late minutes where, I mean, what, they held them scoreless almost to the end of the first quarter. I was watching Scrap Time and still that much more entertained, just because what an efficiently run program by Kelly Graves.
Kelly Graves is one of my favorite people on the University of Oregon campus, regardless of the fact that he's a coach, regardless of that, just human beings near or on campus of the University of Oregon. Kelly Graves is way high on that list, just for every reason under the sun, whether it's the fact that he is a terrific basketball coach, a terrific mentor, a fun guy to be around, a fun guy to talk to. He is just one of the best through and through.
Well, don't lie. It's also his collection of kicks. I know what you're really after here. And
you know, I'm really not the biggest shoe guy, but I'll give him credit. It is a really impressive collection.
His collection in specific would get you going, because man, there's nobody with the finest Oregon shoes out there. I rock some fantastic Oregon shoes at games, but Coach Graves, he's got me for sure. But man, I'm really excited to see both these teams circling it back to football and just kind of wrapping it all up, man. What's it been like for you on campus with you specifically? This is your last hurrah at Oregon. You know, you're taking it all in. You're living your best life, but you're there in the pit crew, as we saw with Joey Harrington starting it off in some fantastic pictures. I hope you've seen on Twitter. Make sure you're following us, because man, seeing him in the OG pit crew, it brought a tear to my eye, young Sam. It was like, I feel so happy to be able to connect the OG to the current godfather of the pit crew, in my opinion.
Well, and you know what? It's been really fun. The project that came out earlier this week where we were able to kind of show off the new pit crew shirts, which honestly, I should have probably worn on the podcast this week if I was really thinking about it. I would have thrown it on, but I've got it sitting over there in the corner. It's a really fun one this year, but I think being able to put together a project, shout out my buddy Carter, who did a lot of the videography for that. He really, really crushed it. Just being able to put that project together, be able to start some pit crew conversation, if you will, and get a guy like Joey in on it. It was some fun traction to be able to pick up, if you will.
Yeah, just beautiful, and compliments to not only that, but thanks again. While I'm on vacation, you produced a fantastic episode. It's the first episode, I think, maybe in the history of the podcast I've watched twice. And maybe that's because, you know, at least I wasn't there for it. But I'd like to say it was the quality of the episode. Thanks again to Joey and Keenan for coming on again. And man, I am so excited for whatever we have in store tomorrow at Wazoo. And I mean, whatever comes next, whatever we have, whatever our podcast guests, it's been fantastic to work with you, Sam, and been really, really good to see you. And man, it's been really, really heartwarming. My vacation, my little time away, also reminded me how much I love doing this show for everyone out there and just being with you, man.
Well, Nick, I appreciate the sentiments, and it's all warm and fuzzy and all of that fun stuff, but I'm going to see you tomorrow as far as the listeners are concerned. I'm going to see you on Saturday. I'm going to see you out there as Oregon with the white helmets, the green jerseys, and the white pants take on a Washington State team coming in with some red lids, some gray pants. It's going to be a fun ball game. I can't wait to watch it. Nick, I know you're going to give our VIPs your in-depth breakdown, as you always do. For now, though, give people the quick summary and your final score. What's going to happen on Saturday night?
Oh, man, I want to see, and I don't want to become that homer guy, but I even told you, I think after the Colorado game and the UW game, I felt it even more. This team is ready, in my opinion. I do believe with the trajectory I've seen, and if we can continue to overcome the amount of injuries that we've had with the depth that we currently have on this roster, this team should be a playoff team. I believe in that. And if it's true, this should be, I believe, another 10-point win. I don't think it's going to be the 14 points. I think it's going to be 10-point win, and it's probably going to come out in the fourth quarter to be something where the Cougs start drawing back. We get ourselves a little nervous, and I honestly think that we are going to come out and get a 34-24 win over the Cougs. I think we're going to have a big lead, kind of maybe third quarter, come out with a lot of energy in Autzen Stadium before it gets late, and I think the Cougs will rally in some usual Pac-12 after dark lateness. But I'll get into more of the, why that is for our VIPs in the DMs here pretty soon. But what do you think?
You know, your score was very close to what mine was. I think we both have a feeling Washington State will probably score about four times. I think for some reason, I think they all end up being touchdowns. I think they're able to get about 28 on the board, but I'll give Oregon credit. I think they're able to put up a little more and then some. I agree the 10-point differential makes a lot of sense. It feels very accurate. I think Camden's able to put one through the uprights to make that happen. Final score, Oregon 38, Washington State 28. It's going to be kind of a tough one. It's going to be after dark, but with a crazy football season like this, win, advance, just stay alive. That's all Oregon has to do.
Well, we're not too far off, man. We're thinking the same thing. And yeah, I'd love to see a bunch of Camden Lewis points. But again, I like seeing touchdowns. So
touchdowns are fun. Touchdowns are fun. And I'll tell you this is an important note, really quick to hit. With an Oregon victory on Saturday, coupled with, so you would have to have other things fall into place.
Yeah.
An Oregon State loss to Stanford earlier in the day.
Hmm.
That sets Oregon up for everything they need moving forward. Yeah. That sets Oregon up for a trip to Vegas right there. Yeah. Of course, that's not the only thing you're focused upon. Of course, that's not the only thing you're worried about. Of course, it's game by game. Every game matters just as much. But you could, if things go right earlier in the day, be able to really take care of some business on Saturday night.
Yeah, that's true. And could set you up. But again, and especially having Nate on, we got to go with the coach speak. It's we just got to be 1-0 this week, man. And man, fantastic having Nate on, fantastic being back, having one of our longer episodes. I think the fans deserve it after waiting because our opponents last week just really weren't worth another episode. You know, we love to promote the hashtag, you know, hate week, but they just didn't earn it this year. And I think that showed on the field. And we're on to Wazoo. We can't wait to see you again next week. And I hope you tune in. Hope you're subscribed. And once a duck, always a duck.